the dialogue that you find in the book of Exodus, chapters 3 and 4, concerns a conversation that God had with Moses. Some have called it the call of Moses, or God's interview with Moses. It's that passage that is familiar to many of us. Maybe it's the first time you've ever even heard of the story of God calling out a man named Moses. God appeared in a burning bush, that burned with fire, but yet was not consumed. Exodus chapters 3 and 4 is the call of Moses, and it parallels the very fact that God calls each one of us to do His will, to take the tasks that He has set before us, to be willing to obey Him, no matter what the cost. It's no mistake that the illustration of obedience in this little booklet I hold in my hand, Seven Truths from Experiencing God. This is that booklet I mentioned last week that we have them in the atrium. If you would do me the favor of joining me Thursday evening down in the Fellowship Center at 7 o'clock, we will have a greeting, have a prayer, and then begin a brief 20-minute DVD by the author of this study called Experiencing God, and then we'll discuss it and pray before we leave. You'll be gone by 8 o'clock. We're going to do that for 6 Thursday nights in a row, and then the following Monday, which is November 12, will be our 7th meeting together. These little booklets are only $2, and they're geared for students and up. So you're all invited. It's not intended for just a specific group in our church. I would promise you that if you will pick up this booklet, read the first chapter, come Thursday night, then you can make up your mind whether or not you want to participate anymore. And I am confident that coming once will make you want to come back and experience God. But it's no mistake that the man's picture, the illustration of obedience throughout this study, is that of the author's version of the man Moses. It begins in Exodus chapters 3 and 4. And I want to use that passage this morning to challenge each one of us in whatever area it is where you're facing a choice of obedience. The passage picks up in chapter 4 is where we want to begin. We don't have time to cover chapter 3, but chapter 3 begins the interview. It's where God appears to Moses when Moses is up in the mountain in the wilderness. He is working. And he sees the bush that is burning but is yet not consumed. A perfect picture of God. His presence is with us. It is never extinguished. It's a perfect picture of the fact that even though we may go through trials and afflictions, no matter how severe they may be, we are never completely destroyed. And it's a perfect picture, the burning bush is, of what God can do with the life of someone who surrenders themselves to the plan of God. In Exodus chapter 3, when God begins to convey to Moses what he wanted him to do, Moses responds with some questions, some obvious questions. They're really excuses, but they appear to be questions. In Exodus 3, the first question Moses asks is, well, who am I? You know, he kind of deflects glory away from himself and says, Lord, I'm not worthy. You know, I'm just Moses. I'm 80 years old, and I don't have the best reputation, and who am I to do what you want me to do, to go back to Egypt and to lead your people out of slavery? God discusses that with him, and then Moses asks another question. He says, well, who are you? Who am I going to say sent me, if anyone asks? And that's where God revealed his name, that strange name. I am is my name, God said. Just the verb of being. In the Hebrew language, I am. The consonants are YHWH. That's where we get the name Yahweh or Yahweh for God. I am sent you. I am. I always was. I always will be. If anyone asks who sent you, you can tell them that I am sent you. And then we pick up in chapter 4 where Moses asks another question. We begin in verse 1. Moses said, what if they will not believe me or listen to what I say? For they may say, the Lord has not appeared to you. The Lord said to him, what's in your hand, Moses? And he said, a staff. He said, throw it on the ground. So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent. and Moses fled from it. But the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand and grasp it by its tail. So he stretched out his hand and he caught it, and it became a staff in his hand once again. That they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. The Lord furthermore said to him, Moses, put your hand into your bosom. So he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous like snow. Then he said, put your hand into your bosom again. So he put his hand into his shirt again, and when he took it out, behold, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. If they will not believe you or heed the witness of the first sign, they may believe the witness of this last sign. But if they will not believe even these two signs or heed what you say, then you shall take some water from the Nile, pour it out on dry ground. The water which you take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground. Exodus chapter 3. Moses meets God. God appears in the form of a burning bush, a bush that is burning, bright with fire, but is never consumed. God gives Moses a commission, a task. I want you to go back to Egypt, and I want you to lead my people out of bondage. Moses responds, who am I to do this? Who are you? And now it's, what if they won't believe me? That's where we picked up in chapter 4. The ultimate excuse, perhaps. What if they won't believe what I say? What am I supposed to do then? But you notice that God is patient with Moses, as he is with us. And he gives him three confirming signs that should have encouraged him to not worry about whether the people would listen to him or not. That if they responded with a no-care attitude, if they said, who are you to be saying these things? He was to take the staff that he carried with him, drop it on the ground, and it would become a serpent. He would pick it up by its tail. Not the wisest place to pick up a snake, I'm so told. And it became a staff again. The very hands that Moses had used years before to commit murder, they would turn leprous, diseased. And yet when he put his hand back into the fold of his shirt and brought it out again, it would appear natural, the color of the rest of his flesh. And then if those two signs didn't do enough for people to pay attention, then it was no mistake that God said, because God knew he would appear before Pharaoh and the Egyptian officials. He said, you take a pitcher of water from the Nile. And the Nile was not just a river. It was life. The Nile River was the reason that life could be sustained in that part of the world. It's still that way today. For without the occasional rains, which are few and far between in that part of the world, to provide just enough water to flood the banks of the Nile River for them to inundate the surrounding fields to enrich the soil, there would be no raising of crops. There would be no restoring of the life of life. There would be no way livestock could maintain life. They could survive. The Nile was life. The Nile was a god to the Egyptians. And he said, you will take water from the Nile and you will pour it out on dry ground and it will become blood. So Moses said, who am I? God gave him an answer. Moses said, who are you? God gave him an answer. Now Moses says, what if they won't believe me? God says, I will give you not one, not two, but three confirming signs that my presence is with you. Excuses. That's all Moses has been offering up to now. Same thing with you and me. I have in my pocket the results of an official survey, a top 10 list, if you will. This is the first top 10 list that's ever been created in mankind. I know you know that. A top 10 list that begins with number 10 and moving toward number 1, whereas number 1 is perhaps the most important, the one that was repeated the most times. 10 reasons why people like you and me refuse to serve, refuse to answer the call of God in our life. These results tabulated in these 10 reasons are from people just like you and me, people within the life of our church. So here they are. Number 10 reason. Why people say or people refuse to serve. I just really need to work on me right now. Number 9, the 9th reason people refuse to serve God, to answer His call in their lives, especially in the life of the church. I've already done my time. It's time for some young buck to come in and take my place. Have you ever heard that one before? Number 8, I think I can squeeze something in between my spinning class at 7:45 a.m. and my 9:30 a.m. board meeting, but that's only every third Tuesday. Will that work? Number 7, is there something I can do that doesn't require any contact with people? Number 6, holding phone to the ear. I'm sorry, that's just not my spiritual gift. Well, that isn't my spiritual gift either. Neither is that one, nor that. Number 5, children freak me out. Number 4, phone to the ear. What did you say? Can you hear me now? I think we have a bad connect. Number 3, I'm very concerned that viewer ratings for NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, MLS, PGA, and NASCAR will tank without me. Number 2, apparently you don't know me very well, otherwise you would have never asked. And the number 1 reason people refuse to serve. I thought that's what we paid minister types like you to do. You ever heard those before? You ever used those excuses before? Really doesn't matter how you picture them, how you state them. It goes back to a man named Moses who in the 3rd and the 4th chapters of the book of Exodus had a conversation with God who appeared in the form of a burning bush, a bush that was burning but yet was not consumed. It's a perfect picture of God. It's a perfect picture of the fact that though we may endure tremendous trials, we will never be completely destroyed. And it's a perfect picture of what God can do in the life of someone who yields their life to His power. But here goes Moses. Who am I? Who are you? What if people won't believe me? And the excuses continue. You pick up in verse 10 of chapter 4. Then Moses said to the Lord, "Please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither recently nor in times past, nor since you have spoken to your servant. For I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." The Lord said to him, "Who has made man's mouth? Or who makes him mute or deaf or seen or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now then go, and I, even I, will be with your mouth, and I will teach you what you are to say." It's interesting here. The translation from one language to another sometimes is awkward at best, and this is one of those places. That's why the English translations say that Moses said, "My problem is I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." The Hebrew text, the language of the Old Testament, the best way we can render that is that Moses had some type of speech impediment. Some would say he was a stutterer. Now, this isn't an excuse. In my mind, this would be a bona fide reason. I mean, think about it. God appears to Moses, says, "I want you to go do this. I want you to speak my word. I want you to communicate to people." And if the primary job Moses was to do involved public speaking, and you've got a man with a severe speech impediment, whether it was stuttering or whatever it was, this automatically excuses Moses from service, would it not? I mean, think about it. If, you know, when you pursued your education, if you were at that stage of life at one time, or if you're about to, or if you're in it now, you know, there are advisors in any profession, counselors, guidance counselors, all the way through. What are they supposed to do? They're supposed to do things like say, "Stephen, here, take this test of your aptitude, and this kind of occupation would suit you well, or this kind of job would suit you well. You're exactly programmed to do this or that. This is a good way to begin your training and to pursue your education because it's something you have an interest in and you're gifted at it." You would never, in good conscience, lead a person down a career path where they weren't, not only weren't qualified, but where they had something that was blatantly going to set them up to fail. And that's what this is. I mean, how can you speak? How can you be an effective communicator if you can't get the words out? If people are pained to hear you speak. But you notice God said, Moses, you asked me a few couple of chapters ago, who am I? I am. I will be with you. I will see you through. Then comes what I call the dangerous point. It's dangerous because in verse 13, the Word of God says, please, Lord, now send the message by whomever you will. Then the anger of the Lord burned against Moses. Why? What's the connect there? What is the relationship between, Lord, send whomever you will, and the anger of the Lord burning against Moses who said that? Well, follow the logic. God said, I want you to do this. I've been patient with you on who are you. I've been patient with you on who am I. I've been patient with you on the fact that you say that they may not believe you. I've given you three affirming signs. I've been patient with you when you said, I have a speech impediment. But at the bottom of all of that, after all is said and done, what did Moses say? Lord, choose someone else. And that inflamed the anger of the Lord against Moses. It's as though Moses were saying, I don't really care what you're saying, Lord. Choose someone else. The anger of the Lord burned against Moses. But then notice what he did. Is not your brother Aaron the Levite? I know that he speaks fluently. And moreover, behold, he's going out to meet you. When he sees you, he'll be glad in his heart. You're to speak to him, put words in his mouth, and I, even I, will be with your mouth and his mouth, and I will teach you what you are to do. Moreover, he shall speak for you to the people. He will be as a mouth for you, and you will be as God to him. You shall take in your hands this staff with which you shall perform the signs. See, Moses got real close, and he really crossed the line for a moment, but thank goodness he stepped back from it. But he came to this point where, when all was said and done, he just said no. He said no. And that's when the anger of the Lord burned against Moses, where it burns against you and me. When he asks us and gives us a task to do, and he is patient with us through all the questions and all the excuses, and when he has answered that he will be with us, when we turn and walk away and say, no, choose someone else. That's a dangerous point. But look at what God did. This is how great God is. God was gracious to Moses even at that point. For he said, okay, if you're going to make your speech impediment such a huge deal, what's your brother's name? Aaron. Aaron has the gift of speaking. He speaks fluently. He can move people. He can communicate. So he will come with you, and you will speak to him the words he is to get across, and I will be with you, and I will be with him. And he will listen to you. You're his authority. And we will work that way. It's amazing that God allowed Aaron to participate, and Moses got his way there. God was willing to work with him. He was willing to use all the excuses. Even when Moses said, choose someone else, and the anger of the Lord, I don't know, maybe that bush just kind of flamed up extra big for just a moment. But Moses got the word when it singed the hair on his head, no doubt, that he'd best rethink his position. And isn't it funny that he allowed Aaron to be the spokesperson, and the very person that Moses wanted alongside him so desperately ended up causing so much trouble? For it was Aaron who let the people fashion a golden calf when Moses was up on the mountain receiving the law of God. It was Aaron in Numbers 12 that spends a whole chapter from the beginning to the end doing nothing but griping and criticizing his brother. And yet God was patient enough and said, let Aaron speak for you. Let Aaron speak the words. You see what it all boils down to, folks? You see it, don't you? I mean, it doesn't matter how many chapters it takes. Exodus 3 and 4 is all we needed here. It could have taken 40 chapters. End result would have still been a choice that Moses had to make. A choice to step out in obedience or to seriously say no. Choose someone else. Where does that leave you and me? Where does it leave you in light of commitments that you know you need to make to God? Don't be the person that is so marginal and gives so little of time and finances, and then yet acts like it's going to be your way or the highway. Don't be a person that stumbles through life with a chip on your shoulder because things haven't gone your way. Don't be a person that continually says no, because I've come to believe that people who have that attitude, people who are children of God, people who should be living the abundant life and bringing those Thanksgiving offerings that we were asked to bring of our in our prayers just a little bit ago when we were singing. The people who can't seem to do that are people who, when you really go back and trace the root cause, it's a conversation just like Moses had, with one excuse piled upon another. And that's the way it will be until we say yes to the plan of God for our lives. It's a choice. It always has been, and it always will be. Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for the opportunity to be here in this room, gathered together as your people, calling upon your name. And Father, I pray that in these closing moments of our hour here together, that you would speak to us, that you would motivate us, that you would deal patiently with us as you did with Moses. And Father, it's my prayer that we respond as Moses did, ultimately, by choosing to serve. These are the prayers we offer in the name of Christ Jesus our Lord. Amen. We offer an invitation as we conclude this service today. In just a moment, we're going to stand and sing. And as we sing, I'm going to be standing right here in the front. The reason I'm standing here is not because you have to come tell me anything. It's not because I'm a priest and you've got to come to me in order to get to God. I'm going to be standing here to be an encouragement to you, to be someone who can pray with you or to give you hopefully good counsel if that's what you need. For it could well be that there are decisions that need to be made public here today. Like what? Well, if you're here today and you've never said yes to the claim of Jesus upon your life, you have never asked him to come into your heart, to forgive your sin, to become his child, then that profession of faith in him, that willingness to step across that line of faith and say yes to him, is the single most important decision that any of us ever make. It's a choice. It's not something your parents can choose for you. It's not something you are because you were born in a certain part of this world or because you go to church at a certain place. It's a reality because of a choice that you've made to follow him. And if that's something you want to do today, then I'm going to be standing here. We'll want to encourage you in that journey of faith. Maybe God would lead you to join our church today. Maybe you're here and you need a place to plug in, a place to serve, a place where you can quit making excuses, but a place where God can continue to use your life. He's promised his presence that he'd always be with us. All you need is a place where you can live out that commitment. So we offer our church, First Baptist Church here in Louisville, to be a support to you. Come forward and join this church today. That's how we receive members, so that we can encourage you. And then wherever you are in your life, whatever of those 10 cards may have made a smile come across your face, but in reality, it's exactly the things you've been saying when you've been saying no to God. Consider what that issue is. Consider the choice. And then make a choice to say yes. That's our invitation. We stand together. I wait for you here as we sing. Won't you step out and come forward right now?